This morning I will be reading 1 Corinthians 13, 13. And now abideth faith, hope, charity, these three, but the greatest of these is charity.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Glad to see all of you today. I hope you've had a wonderful week full of people that you love and that it's been a good time for you. I want to encourage you that we are having our singing tonight on Sunday night, and I can't really think of a better way to end the last Sunday of the year than to spend that time together worshiping the Lord. So come join us tonight. I know it'll be a wonderful time singing praises to Him. I always enjoy that special time together. I enjoy our singing. This morning, as we get into our lesson and we begin thinking about it, I'll tell y'all a story I remember hearing when I was in college. One of my classmates, we were at our first class of the week. We began classes on Tuesday. We were 3 days a week at our college. And came in, we're at that first class, we're going to lunch, and he's like, "Man, Sunday was crazy." And I'm like, "Really? What happened?" Well, you know, we're young preachers. A lot of us go off and preach at different schools. And he said, "I did something I'd never done before this last Sunday. I went to a church. There was 9 people there. And I was the only man. I did the whole service. I did the opening prayer. I did all the songs. I did the Lord's Supper. I did the sermon. Then I did an invitation song right after preaching. And then I did the closing prayer." He's like, "I've never been more scared in my whole life. But I got it. I got it. And I'm just going to pretend it never happened." But I remember him telling me that. And, you know, I'm going to tell you all the truth. That was not the most uncommon of stories. I've heard quite a few of those. I've experienced some like that myself. And I thought about this idea of what it means to be a servant. And I respected and I appreciated my friend because he was there. And it was this really intimidating opportunity he did not know he was getting into, where he was going to have to take care of all these things, and that could be scary. And he did it. He stepped up, and he decided that it was important that that be done, and he took care of it. And I think there's something beautiful about this idea of service, about finding yourself in an opportunity where you can do something to help another person or something important, and taking that opportunity. I was sitting here thinking this week about how many different opportunities we have, like, every day to serve people. I mean, there's opportunities we have at church, like everybody that takes part in serving one another or teaching our classes or just greeting and encouraging one another. That's a form of service. There's things like our fellowship meals. I know y'all had a meal here yesterday at the church, and I was thinking, you know, every person that took the time to make something for that meal, to cook it and to bring it up here, that was this really great, wonderful act of selfless service, where you wanted to provide something for others at cost to yourself of time and money. Really, any meal, you know, when somebody sits down and they make you food, that is a great act of service on their part. I tell y'all, the weirdest thing I think about getting married was about the fact that sometimes my wife sits down and she makes me dinner. Sometimes I sit down and I make my wife dinner. And I just remember when I was a kid, you know, if I looked at one of my sisters and said, "Hey, would you mind cooking this for me? I don't know how." My sister would look like then and said, "You got 2 hands. You better go take care of that yourself." But sometimes we love each other and we serve one another. And I think all those are just wonderful, wonderful things, from cooking to doing the dishes to taking out the trash to returning a buggy to the stall when you're leaving the grocery store. I think each form of service matters. It can be a big or a small thing. It can be something as simple as any of these things we've described, or even something as big as when you're in a fight with somebody you love, deciding that maybe that relationship is more important and maybe letting this thing that ain't that important go. Maybe coming to Thanksgiving dinner when you're a little frustrated with somebody and you know that maybe that's not as important as your family. And I thought about all these different types of service and humility as I thought about the passage we're looking at today in John chapter 13. We've been spending time in the beginning of John 13 where Jesus washes the disciples' feet, and talking about our mindset With that, Jesus has revealed himself as a God who serves and a God who cleanses in the beginning of John 13. It tells us he's going to love his own to the end, and he's going to serve them by giving his life for the world so that we could be saved from our sins. These are the messages from these first 11 verses of chapter 13. Jesus finishes washing the feet of the disciples. He puts back on his outer garments and he resumes his place as their leader. Jesus then asks an important question to his disciples. Do you understand what I've done for you? And the question shows that what Jesus has done is more than just foot washing. The washing of feet really isn't the issue here. If foot washing was the point, then the question is absurd. But the disciples know what Jesus did. Jesus is reaching for a greater meaning that can be found in what he just done. We observed in our first lesson from this text that Jesus has gone low. He's become a servant. He's displayed this humble service. He's taken off this outer garment that shows him as their leader, this glorious outer garment. He's tied a towel around his waist and he's washed the disciples' feet. Then he puts that garment back on and takes his rightful place. And it's almost like this little example. Of course Jesus washed the disciples' feet. You could take that little story of him, you know, stripping off his glory and becoming a servant and taking care of them. It's almost like a little version of his entire life put in one place. He took off this heavenly being that he was and he came down to earth and died for us. And then he went back to where he belongs and resumed his rightful place and did all of that to be an example to us and to save us from our sins. Like this one act just embodies everything about who Jesus is. He is this being of extreme humble service. And he's all about this disregard for his own power and his position, but instead caring about us and who we are, what we need. And as we think about that, I want us to get to what Jesus wants us to do. You know, if he's done this, if he's served us, if he's been there for us in this humble way, how does he want us to respond to that act? And he tells the disciples, starting in verse 13 of chapter 13. I'll go back up to read verse 12. It says in verse 12, when he had washed their feet and put on his outer garments and resumed his place, he said to them, do you understand what I've done to you? And starting in verse 13, he says, you call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for so I am. If I then, as your teacher and Lord, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you also should do just as I have done. Truly, truly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them. Jesus is trying to teach the disciples what they're supposed to learn from this amazing act of love. He says, you call me teacher, and you're right. I am your teacher and your Lord. He doesn't deny who he is. He is the great teacher. He is the master. And if Jesus is the master, he wants them to realize, okay, now you know who I am. Think about what I just did. What does that mean for who you are? Jesus is saying that if the Lord and the teacher has washed the disciples' feet, then if they're disciples, if they're students, if they're followers of his, then at a minimum, they need to be ready to wash each other's feet. If it's a good enough task for Jesus to do, it's good for them to do as well. What has Jesus done? You know, what were the disciples supposed to see? Is it about washing of feet? Well, they don't, according to the story, from what we see, actually get up and wash each other's feet. So that's not the idea here. It's not about this idea of physically doing this one physical action, but it's about displaying humility. And you know, it's funny that Jesus would even display humility because Jesus is actually the only being on the planet that doesn't need to. You know, that I'm humble because I have limitations. Like, there's a lot of things in life I can't do. And so I should walk with a fair amount of humility because if I decide I can fly and I just, you know, run and jump off something that is way too high, that's not going to end well for me. I have limits and I need to be aware of those limits. I need some humility. But Jesus? Jesus has no limits, no reason to be humble, and yet he chooses to be. The Apostle Paul says, "For by him all things were created in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible. Whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things were created through him and for him. And he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. He is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in everything he might be preeminent." And yet Jesus, the head of all things, the thing that holds all of our universe together, has this great humility to sit down and to wash the disciples' feet, to serve them. We see this humility in him taking this lower role, this godly love, not just by sacrificing himself here, being lower than them, serving them, but as we'll see very soon on the cross. And I think it's important to realize how much a big deal it is that Jesus has this humility, because what Jesus is trying to say is, I want you to be the same way. I'm the God of all creation, the all-powerful being. I could do anything, but I've chosen to be a servant. And so I want you to remember that you can do a lot of things, but I want you to be like me, and I want you to choose to be a servant as well. What Jesus is displaying is the humble, self-giving treatment of others without regard for shame or status or honor. What Jesus has done is to become a servant of all, even though everybody else is really lesser than him. We're not disciples of Jesus unless we show and practice that same type of humility. Look at verse 16. We're not greater than Jesus, but are we saying that we are greater than Jesus? Because if we're refusing to give ourselves to others, if we're refusing to serve, then we are. Who am I unwilling to serve? Who do we think is beneath us? Because I think the humility Jesus has displayed, this humble thinking, means that we're going to give ourselves up for others. Humble action gives up self to all people because we're not greater than our master, and that's what he did. Part of what practicing humility like Jesus means is that we need to be able to overlook offenses committed against us. It means we desire reconciliation with each other. It means that we have a heart of forgiveness, not a heart of bitterness. It means that we look for the opportunity to give ourselves to each other. It means we don't take account of what we deserve or something is beneath our time or our action. It means a life focused not on here, but on God, on the people around us and what we can do for them. Humility means that we destroy that pride. You know, humility is that swallowing of the pride. It's the saying, you know, I could do this. I'm not better than this. If there's four people in the room and I could get up and I could take care of this, why don't I do this for them? It's this decision not to look at ourselves as more than we are. Because very often it's pride that blocks humble service. It's this desire of, I don't have to do that. I'm not the person who needs to do that. I'll let somebody else take care of it. That's really something they should handle. If you listen to verse 17, it says, if you know these things, blessed are you if you do them. Well, brethren, we've read it. We know it. So blessed are we if we do them. We know that we are not only to think about ourselves. We know that we're not to discard what Jesus just taught us, what he just showed us. We're to be people that give and love selflessly. They give and give some more. And when we think we cannot give anymore, maybe we give again. We give ourselves and we give completely. And we give even to those that are undeserving. Notice that this is what John wants us to see. Let's continue on to the last part of this whole exchange in verses 18 through 20. It says, I'm not speaking of all of you. I know whom I have chosen, but the scripture will be fulfilled. He who ate my bread has lifted his heel against me. I'm telling you this now before it takes place, that when it does take place, you may believe that I am he. Truly, truly, I say to you, whoever receives the one that I send receives me. And whoever receives me receives the one who sent me. Jesus makes this point at this moment when there is a betrayer among them. I love that. I think that's so interesting. You know, we talked about this already with the foot washing, but Judas is here this whole time. Jesus makes sure Judas is here for the section where Judas serves everybody and he is teaching them about humility. Why does he make that point when he knows that the betrayer is right there, that one of them is not a servant? The point of quoting Psalm 41 verse 9 to show that this is a painful betrayal, that's where that idea of the heel crushing comes from. And I think the point that Jesus is trying to show us in this is that there's no loopholes in this idea of humble service. There is no loophole of, but I don't like that guy. I don't want to help that person. It goes back to the Old Testament law, one of my favorites, of if you see your enemy's ox wandering out, you get it and you take it back to him. You don't laugh about it and let it go. You don't say that guy gets what he deserves. Even your enemy, you get it and you take it back to him, because that's who God's people are, even back in the Old Testament. But here in the New Testament, Jesus is making sure we see he doesn't just serve the people that love him and care about him. He serves even Judas. He washes even Judas's feet before he sends out the betrayer. No one gets the label of undeserving of service in our minds. No one is exempt. Jesus served the one he knew would harm him. We don't just serve people that we like. We don't just give ourselves only to the people who are nice to us and treat us well. We're supposed to give ourselves even to those that might hurt us. We've got to serve like the one who we love. And he served the one who lifted his heel against him. Jesus would serve even his enemies. Jesus washed his feet. He washed our feet. He gave his life for us. We were rebels against God, undeserving of any blessing or goodness that God has to offer. But he served us anyway. And what he's telling us here in John is that no one's greater than that. No one's greater than him. So we're supposed to serve just the same. We've got to follow his example. We can't waver from our mission of glorifying God through humble service, even when we're hurt or betrayed, even when another hurts or harms us. We don't have the right to just stop being this person, to stop giving people chances, to stop loving the people around us. Jesus knew that what he was doing when he washed Judas's feet, and he told us to follow that example. Now, I do want to add a little caveat here at the end that I think is pretty interesting, because Jesus washes Judas's feet, but Jesus also sends Judas away at the end of this chapter. And there are times when sometimes the best way to serve a person might be separation. I think what I like so much about this idea of service that Jesus is teaching us is that's not just a simple thing. To serve Jesus means we take that way of the cross, and the way of the cross is the way of humility. It means getting rid of our pride. It means getting rid of just thinking about ourselves. It means cutting down on those opportunities to be selfish and looking for opportunities to help others. This was so expected of Christians that when Paul wrote to Timothy about who were godly widows that could be cared for by the church, one of the characteristics is that the widows washed the feet of the disciples. Now, I do not believe Paul actually is talking about the physical act of foot washing here. In fact, I kind of made a joke with my title for my sermon. You may have noticed it's Foot Washing People. I don't expect any of you to actually physically wash anyone's feet unless they actually need that. It's the idea here. It's a principle. It's this idea of humble service. That's the people that Paul wanted the church taken care of in 1 Timothy 5, verse 10. They showed humble service in their lives, these widows, and that's what God expects from his followers. We got to remember who we are. You know, looking at verse 16, it's a term we use all the time, this idea of being a servant. We're servants of Christ. But sometimes I think we forget that being a servant of Christ means being a servant of everybody. It means being the lowest of the low, because our master lowered himself as low as he could go. It means swallowing that pride. It means living a life that's not just about us. Being in relationships that are not just about us. Taking actions that are not just about us. But being a servant. Humbly serving one another. Yielding to one another. Giving to one another. That's what it means to love Jesus and to love each other. And I think the important thing is that we remember in this service that that doesn't mean one simple act. It's a pretty complex, hard thing to love and serve others. Being a servant doesn't mean approaching every relationship the same way. It doesn't mean that every time somebody treads on you or betrays you that you just completely accept it and you continue on your merry way. And it doesn't mean that I personally need to volunteer to solve every small problem of every person around me. Many things I can't fix. It doesn't mean we let people get away with murder or bear it as humble servants or that we completely ignore the problematic behavior of people around us. Being a servant's pretty complex. Jesus didn't wash the disciples' feet at every meal. Very often, he didn't take care of basic tasks himself. He would ask for help. He would say, disciples, you know, go get the boat. Go set up the room for the Passover. Even the disciples, after Jesus has washed their feet, just right after the church has begun, there's a great task that needs a servant. Somebody needs to get in there and take care of that. And the disciples' first response is not, Jesus prepared us for this. He washed our feet. What we do is we immediately drop what we're doing and we hop in here and we do this. They said, no, we already have a task. It's important. We find some others. We set them in there. We put them in charge of this thing so that both tasks will be done. I don't think that we should read this passage as the automatic solution to every problem that comes our way, every difficulty we encounter as Christians. I don't think it's as simple as I just serve. I just hop in there and do it. Sometimes I need to find somebody else to volunteer for the task. I need to be encouraging them to do that. Sometimes I need to walk away from a relationship where being part of it is hurting both of us, as Jesus does when he sends Judas away at the end of chapter 13. Sometimes serving others means walking away. Sometimes it means encouraging others to volunteer. Sometimes it means saying no to something to say yes to something else. And I believe what Jesus wanted us to do in this whole example, and something that I'm going to be thinking about a lot as we go into this new year, and I hope we all will, is how can I serve? God's given me a brain. He's given me abilities. He's given me lots of, hopefully, wisdom through the reading of his word. How can I take that and use it to best serve him? What do I need to say yes to? What do I need to say no to? And how can I be his servant in 2022? And I think the core center of that is going to be two things. One is going to depend on my interaction with his word. Am I learning and reading from it? Am I getting the wisdom I need to know what to do when it comes a time where I can serve others? And the second is, am I talking to him? Am I asking him for wisdom and courage and guidance as I figure out this difficult path of being a servant of God in my life? I believe Jesus wanted us to be the best servants that we could be, to be there for others and to do great things in their service. But I think he wanted us to do that using prayer and wisdom as we make those choices about where we might best serve and what being a servant looks like. You know, this year, I don't know how your life has been. Maybe you feel like instead of being a servant, you've had a pretty good amount of pride. You've been pretty served. You've been pretty self-important. Maybe you feel like you look back and feel like, man, I have turned down so many opportunities to be there for others. And I want to change. I'm here to tell you, we got a whole new year coming. And the Lord is happy to forgive you of the times when you've fallen short and to help you to make some changes. He'll give you wisdom and understanding if you'll come to him and look for it. Maybe you aren't a Christian and you don't understand what it's like to have a Savior that served you, that cares about you. Well, if that's the case, we'll help you to become one. I don't know what help you might need today, but anything we can do for you, come forward as we stand and as we sing, and we'll try.
Call.